And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Hello out there, coming to you live from the morass of the Eastern Conference. This is Jurassic Pod, a podcast about the Toronto Raptors. I'm Eric Corrine from The Athletic. With me, as always, from, once again, the Atlantic time zone, Holly McKenzie. Holly, how are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I am also doing okay, which is as well as things can go in
2020.
These days, 2022. I'm doing better because despite what you've put in our rundown here, I predicted the week right. To quote Holly McKenzie, I've decided my 3-0 at home prediction is basically right. We'll get to that. But I was actually right. Hashtag actually right. It's been the Raptors continued their winning ways, made it to 6-game winning streak by
they're
beating,
back. They're back.
We're in a weird place where like the wins are giving me cause for concern and the losses are, which is what you meant by your prediction. And the losses are like, oh yeah, they might actually be decent. They might actually be pretty good. The Raptors beat a shell of the Utah Jazz, who were missing, I believe, 8 of their top 9 scorers, some of whom did not make the trip to Canada. And that was Freddie VanVleet taking over in what was, I think we can say, the best single individual performance by any Raptor we've seen this year, scoring 15 straight points, being generally awesome in the third quarter as the Raptors avoided what was looking like a really bad loss in a win over Utah. We got the return of Jonas Valanciunas in what was a very close game throughout, I want to say, and the Raptors had it up to 10 and looked to be pulling away, and the Pellies kept on pulling back in, but eventually the Raptors, thanks again to some miraculous shots by Fred VanVleet, including a certified Steph fast break, dribbling back outside the three-point arc to take a three, to put the Raptors in the lead for good. The Raptors won that. And then, in what honestly I think was one of the best games of the year from just a competitiveness standpoint, lose to the very good Phoenix Suns 99-95 in another game that was pretty much close throughout. I called it correctly, as I said again.
Listen,
but yes, your 3-0 at home prediction basically being right, I think the only reason that doesn't stand up is because the game against Utah was kind of a moral defeat and the game against Phoenix was a moral victory. I love the term moral defeat. It should be used literally it should be used as much as moral victory because of just where we are as a society. I think as a week, especially considering the Raptors' loss came without Scottie Barnes and Gary Trent, there were more good signs than bad. So Holly, what's your big takeaway from the basketball that we have seen over the last
My big takeaway
days?
My big takeaway is that my prediction was right, basically. I remember when we made them and you definitely did not think that they were going to win against the Suns. Remember?
I did not. Yeah,
and then I thought that they would, and they almost did, and so I think that just counts that we both win. We can be like the two Olympians who tied and decided they would share the medal. That's you and me right now. We're going to share.
The high jumpers.
We'll share. We'll just share that we both were correct, right?
Well, no.
Come on, Eric.
Because I was right and you
but
were wrong.
Eric, but like we could share it. Just say that you will share.
I will acknowledge.
Shared joy.
I will
shared joy is better than singular joy.
I will acknowledge you had some insight into the week and the team and were not entirely spiritually incorrect with your prediction. I will not acknowledge that you were more correct than I was, who because I was maximally correct.
That's a shame for you.
We're off to a very pedantic start to this podcast.
To continue with this, I did want to say when you were mentioning Fred Van Vliet's performance, why am I blanking out on the team? Against Utah, you said it was probably like the best singular Raptors performance of the season. Playoffs aside, have you seen a better Raptors performance since you've covered the team? A better stretch, like a better run by one player. Playoffs aside, I don't want to talk about playoffs because that's just, you know.
I mean, it's hard for me to remember stretches in that way. Like when you talk about individual games, like Kyle Lowry's 42-point game against Cleveland that
against
he
the Cavs
waited with like a step back over Dellavedova, like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's like way, way up there.
There was DeMar's 52
against Milwaukee 50,
and on New Year's Day.
He's had some unreal stretches, and like those guys. I don't know if Lowry ever won a Player of the Month. I think DeMar might have won a Player of the Month as a Raptor. I'm not absolutely positive. So I don't want to like get far too ahead of myself and say it is. I'd really have to do the research. I have to do my own research here, Holly.
There was also the Terrence Ross game against the Clippers.
Yeah, but that was like the best.
I wasn't there for that game.
That was the
best
out of body experience I've ever seen, for sure.
So yeah, okay. See, I was in Erie at a Bayhawks game when that happened because I was stranded because of a snowstorm. I wasn't there, but I was obviously watching very closely from Nova Scotia, and I was so emotional during that performance because it just a few possessions prior, Fred was called. I think it was an out of bounds. I think it was an out of bounds call that went against the Raptors, and because the arena is so quiet, you can hear a lot of what the players are saying on the broadcast. Yeah. And he was talking to an official and he was like, "Come on." And the way he said it, it was so just like he was fed up. Like you could tell he was just like, "I'm done. Like I'm done with the direction that this game is going in." And then he just went insane. He was crazy. It was so incredible to watch. And yeah, I got super emotional watching it because it was just, I'm just very happy for Fred and everything that his work has resulted in for him.
And I think we're getting to a place, not that it matters a lot, but like if you're an all-star voting isn't something I want to take a ton of time considering because like we're only voting for five players in each conference. And it's obviously, especially on the fan side, more of a popularity contest or at least in large part a popularity contest. People voting for their favorite players, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if like you're looking into the people who should be starting this game on merit, I think we're getting close to a point where you can say that Van Vliet should be in the running for that guard spot opposite DeMar DeRozan.
I don't think we're getting close. I think we're there. Like,
okay, so let's like
to say that he's in the running, yeah, of course. I think definitely. And it's so funny because we talked about this a couple weeks ago. You had the prediction episode when you asked me if I thought Fred would be on the defensive team and the All-Star team. And I said no to both, not because they're not deserved, but because I didn't think people would be paying attention to the Raptors because of their record. And now that they've had this like stretch that they've had and his performances have been so incredible and the numbers, the stats have been so mind-boggling to look at. I think even if you're not paying a ton of attention watching every game, even just people like glancing at the stats are going to see those numbers and kind of pay attention. And I thought it was interesting that before the game against the Suns. I think you had tweeted it, that Monty Williams had essentially said,
oh,
like,
God, that tweet was the bane of my existence, but continue.
People, the best.
Continue,
but he had basically said, there's no other player that keeps you up at night like Fred has been because of the run that he's been on and how incredible he's been. That's an all-star. Like the player
I think
that...
unquestionably, like, he deserves to be on the all-star team. He's put himself clearly above that, those guys like battling for the last
spot. Is he
going to
make it though? Do you think he will be on the all-star team?
Yeah, I think he will make it.
I believe
2 weeks and change till the coaches announce the reserves. Mm-hmm. And I think it's possible the Raptors go on a huge losing streak and Van Vliet gets injured and like...
Don't say that. I'm just
trying to lay out the case that he doesn't. Like, it would have to be something like that. Or Van Vliet goes on like a terrible streak of performances where all of us... And like the Hornets get hot and Boston gets hot and then all of a sudden you're like, why? But right now I'd say 90-10 that Van Vliet ends up making. But the question I was asking you, Holly, is not whether he's going to make the All-Star team. It's whether, based on merit, he should have
He should be in the conversation
spot.
Is what you said. You didn't say should he be starting again. Or
so
decide. You said
let
in the conversation.
Let me quickly run down some of the candidates. We got Trae Young, whose team is bad, but who... himself is an offensive engine unto himself. We've got Drew Holiday. We've got James Harden. We've got LaMelo Ball. Am I missing anybody else? Obvious. Zach LaVine, if you can see. I think he's listed as a front court player. But
I feel like he is too.
It's really weird how...
Yeah, like, I know.
The Bulls are just weird, obviously, because like by size, DeMar and LaVine are their 3 and 4, I think. They're forwards. But by position, like, DeMar is essentially their point guard or their offensive point guard. And LaVine is, you know, pretty close to a shooting guard. Anywho, am I missing anybody obvious in the East other than those guys?
I kind of blanked out.
Miami,
I have to admit that.
Miami, not really, because Butler's a forward.
Miami, Milwaukee, Philadelphia.
There's Darius Garland, but I don't think he's in the conversation. Bradley Beal isn't in the conversation. Jaylen Brown isn't in. I love the term
in the conversation because it's come to mean so much more than just
it's the conversation. It's at the same level of
The MVP.
Is he elite? Is he an elite quarterback? This word means nothing. Let's just. So I really do think it comes down to Young. If we're just doing it on merit, it's Young, Van Vliet, Holiday, Harden. I'm putting DeRozan in one of those spots. And let's not count LaVine because I think he is listed as a front court player. Would you have him as number one? He's in the conversation. In the conversation. But would you have him as number one right now of those players?
I think I would, but also I think I'm biased here. So
that's why a Raptors podcast.
But your opinion's better at being more reasonable. My opinion is better.
I don't think my opinion is.
No, not your opinion, but like your brain. Your brain is better. And you also know when it comes to Fred that I'm bad at
I think I'd lean Trae Young right now.
I feel like too for the star power, and he's an amazing player.
I feel like when a player's
already been an all-star, like, you know what I mean? People kind of expect to see them
like,
there
again. I do find a like all-star and most valuable players aren't the same as me to me. I should say, like,
they're not the same as you. You're not an all-star or a most valuable player.
I am both. like, you're sort of with all-stars, I'm just trying to get like the five best performances out there, which aren't exactly the same thing as most valuable. Like what Trae Young does for an offense on a night-to-night basis is incredible. And if he played with you know, if DeAndre Hunter were healthy and if Clint Capella were Rudy Gobert, like, I think the defense would look a lot better, and this isn't a conversation.
Like, he's so undeniably good and talented that if he was given, like, a level playing field of talent around him, barring injuries, et cetera, you would say, of course he's going to be there. Yeah, no, I get that.
And with Van Vliet, like, yes, the Raptors fall off the board when he's not on the floor, but A, that's more of a value consideration for me than a pure, like, greatness consideration, just because the Raptors lack depth. We've seen it. So it's more about who the Raptors don't have behind him rather than him, even though, you know, he's obviously been great this year. And when I do my report card at the midseason, he's going to get an A, spoiler alert.
A or A plus?
The A plus has been, I think I've only given one A plus, and it was to Kyle Lowry once. So
yeah, I remember this.
I try to be as stingy as possible with that. I have been thinking about that. So it's more between A and A plus rather than
I
A
think
and
he
A
needs
minus.
To get the plus. Come on, Eric. Yeah, look at what we've seen.
You just admitted to your own bias.
Also, you realize you're asking me in this little scenario to impartially decide against a situation that could give me DeMar DeRozan and Fred VanVleet together again at the All-Star game in the backcourt. Like, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Anyway,
of course, that's what it should be.
That'd be great. That's the literal dream for you.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, it's not going to happen. He's too far down in the fan vote, which is 50% of the what determines the starters. So unless things change dramatically in that way, even if the media and players are all aboard the Fred VanVleet train, which I do not believe will happen to the extent
Global Ambassador,
necessary.
Get your tweets out.
Yeah, where is that guy? Raptors games, but that's just
I mean,
he's
okay,
good,
no
that
one
just
is at
means
Raptors
he's being
games.
A good Canadian.
Yes.
Yeah. So
oh, I need to mention, before we go forward, go I'm sorry I'm interrupting you. I didn't put this on the rundown. We need to talk about, or we don't need to talk about, but I need to ask from your perspective in the arena, Booker's beef with the Raptor.
I didn't even notice it in real time.
Oh, that's so disappointing. I was really hoping you would have good insight.
Yeah, no, I unfortunately, like, it was the end of the game. Like, at that point, it was a free
Pretty
throw
close,
shooting contest.
Yeah.
So I was, like, trying to get as much organized for post-game writing as possible.
That's
you
fair.
Know how it goes. I was fairly confident Devin Booker was going to make those free throws.
Yeah.
I just want to say the Suns starting five is the best. I don't even know if the best is the right word, but it's such a satisfying old school, mm-hmm. not even mm-hmm. old school. Like, it's just like such a sensible starting five that it's just logically pure. Like, I love the way they move the ball. Like, when they run a mm-hmm. Paul Ayton pick and roll, like, everything, like, you can just see the defense getting, not knowing whether to collapse onto Ayton or to stay connected to Crowder and Bridges. Like, the difference between Van Vliet and Siakam trying to operate with, you know, Chris Boucher, who's been great, by the way, and, you know, Kem Birch or whoever the fifth guy was out there on the weak side, and Paul doing it with, you know, the option to give it to Booker, to ISO, or the option to dump it off to Ayton, or with Crowder and Bridges in the shooting positions. That's just a perfectly constructed starting unit. And that in a way gets back to how you were right, that the Raptors missing two of their guys were able to hang so close with that team is really a huge credit to them.
What was that? You said that I was right. Eric, let's just share the award that I've created in my head.
Yeah, maybe if the Winter Olympics had started, I could get behind that, but not yet. All right, so Fred VanVleet will make the All-Star team unless something weird happens. I believe you have until February 22nd to vote for him. At least that's when my media vote is due, so I'm going to assume that's when the fan vote is due. And, you know, sure, I'll let you guys know who I vote for after that. That seems reasonable.
That is reasonable. But this isn't the reasonablest, sorry.
No, Rip reasonablists. Pascal Siakam remains good. Remains good at basketball over the last 15 games. He is averaging 23.1, 9.4, 7.4 on 48% shooting. Free throw shooting is down. And the Raptors kind of lost that game on the free throw line last night, or Tuesday night. But now you have here Pascal All-Star. I think that extra spot is going to a guard, but yeah, let's make the case. Why don't we make the case? Do you want to make the case?
He's been incredible. And I think that people keep looking at, we talked about this last week, so I don't know why I'm repeating myself, but his assists, they just keep going up. He just keeps finding ways to find his teammates and create offense for them. And I just think he's been really, really good, like all around great for them through this stretch. And it's good to see.
Yeah, I said 9.4 and 7.4. That was wrong. 9.4 rebounds and 5.4 assists. So not quite as ridiculous as I made it sound. I was looking at the defensive rebound category instead of the assist category.
Oh, that'll get ya.
Gets ya every time. Half of the time, every time.
He did, but I will say against the Suns, he did finish with 22, 7, 7, and then also 3 assists. He was really good in that game.
Yeah, guy's talented. As I tweeted, somebody should come up with a nickname for him based on his skill set.
That's a pretty funny tweet.
Yeah. So good that I am repeating it verbally. Also, I think something lost here is I kind of think over the last few weeks, he's been the best, at least front court defender on the
defender.
Team. Yeah, like I think the Raptors need OG Anunoby to get back to that level. And I think, like, Anunoby's been really good, and we haven't talked about it much lately, because he just, like, he's kind of the guy sacrificing those looks, right? Like, not even from a shot quantity perspective, although he's, like, clearly third in that pecking order behind Van Vliet and Siakam, but just shot type. Like, there's just not as much on his shoulders from a creation standpoint and from, you know, a post-up or isolation standpoint. And I think the great thing about his season is we saw him making strides in those bigger areas before Pascal Siakam came back. And we've seen him pretty much keep the efficiency up as he's been the guy who has sacrificed those looks maybe as much as anybody not named Scotty Barnes since Siakam has come back and since he's returned to full health. So, like, there's not much to say other than OG Anunoby is really good, and if he had a slightly bigger role, he'd probably be in the same sort of space that Siakam is in terms of the All-Star conversation, which I interrupted you from fully answering, I think.
No, I don't think you interrupted. I think you just gave your answer.
Yeah, I think...
Speaking about front court defenders, though, that kind of led me into Scotty, just talking about Scotty, who didn't play against the Suns, and then he also missed... What was the last game that he missed?
Scotty missed the first game back after... I think it was the Clippers game now.
I feel like
he returned on the Sunday, and the Friday was New Year's Eve, yes.
Yeah, I guess that was a little bit further back than it feels like in my brain. That feels like that was only a week ago and not almost 2 weeks. So, yeah, so 2 games in, what, 10
six
days?
Or seven, yeah, 6 or 7 games.
I think both due games. To a knee tendonitis?
Knee tendonitis. They're now calling it knee soreness.
Knee soreness.
Yeah. It's not a great...
I love the ever-evolving injury titles that we get.
Will it be tendonitis? Will it be swelling? Will it be soreness? are they interchangeable? Does anything mean anything?
A contusion?
Yeah.
What are your... Nothing means anything. That's what we've learned in and out of basketball. What are your thoughts on that? Are you concerned at all about it? And does the team seem to be concerned? It was a bummer to not see him out there against the... I mean, it's always a bummer to not see Scotty because he's such a delight to see on the court. But Yeah.
I mean, I'm a bit concerned. The Raptors aren't expressing much concern out loud. But whenever a guy misses time over like a few games, even if they're separated for the same reason over the span of time, you're left wondering what's going to be the thing that solves that. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, not unlike the Kem Birch situation where he missed time with knee swelling. It was sort of unexplained knee swelling, like testing didn't reveal any injury, but he was out for 3 games, I believe. He came back and then he was out for a month. And like, yeah. I'm not saying
like 6 weeks. Yeah.
I'm not saying that's what I expect to happen for Scottie Barnes, but I mean, he's a 20-year-old foundation for your player, for your team, who, like, kind of low-key has a strange gait to his running, which, you know, is sort of natural for a 20-year-old, probably. I'm sure. You remember Jonas Valanciunas was his running coach? Maybe they'll hire that guy in Oregon, right? Yeah, I think so.
I don't think
that was a smash hit. So maybe they'll find a new guy, not to besmirch the Oregon running coach. But like, I think it's something you obviously want to be super cautious with. It's just when...
Do you think it could just be like that he is tired and feeling the length of the season and is a little sore? So because they're being so cautious, it's like, oh, let's just rest.
I don't know. I hate to speculate on this stuff because there's more information behind the scenes than we know.
I was surprised, is what I'll say. And obviously I hope he is just fine and just needed a little break.
Yeah. With that in mind, what have you made of Scotty with the, let's just say, the big three all playing?
Because
he's certainly taken a backseat from a scoring perspective.
That's what I was... Yeah, I definitely think he... And again, maybe this is a result of fatigue from the season or something like a knee issue. I don't want to speak to that because, like you said, we don't know. But I definitely think what we do know is that he's been trying to sort of figure out where he fits within that role. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like since Pascal has been back and since everyone is together, I think that he's trying to feel out where, like, what his role is and where he should be getting his shots and getting his, like, does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think it's a huge compliment when you realize he's averaging what he's averaging, and I don't have like the stats in front of me for the last few games, but like he does so much of it, you know, in transition or, you know, as second chance opportunities, that just bodes well for, you know, even when his role has increased and he's having an off night shooting or as the lead creator or whatever, assuming we get there, like he'll still be able to find ways to contribute, you know, much. That's sort of similar to the conversation we've had in the past about Pascal Siakam, who, you know, when he's at his, I don't want to say worst, but when he's not playing to his level, the concern is almost like, where is this defense? Where are these transition buckets? Where are these second chance buckets? And like, given Barnes' general motor and demeanor, like, I think those should be, I mean, there are natural ebbs and flows throughout a season, but I think those should be near constant for him. As I've said it on this podcast, especially with the way the Raptors have been starting when healthy, I'd love to see him as the screener in more actions. Like, they, understandably, they've gone to Van Vliet, Siakam actions late in game because those are your two best on-the-move creators right now, and Van Vliet's shooting just gives them so much gravity and create so much space on the floor for everybody else to drive. But, you know, Siakam's just a bit more reliable from the outside than Scottie Barnes right now. And Barnes' passing is so good that I'd love to find another way to get him involved with that aspect of his game rather than just sort of the Marc Gasol give it to him at the top of the key type thing, which I'd also like to see more of. But that's more when Van Vliet's off the court. On the court, I'd love to see him setting more screens for Fred VanVleet or Pascal Siakam, if you want to talk about a monstrous screen and roll type look.
You mentioned like taking a step back for Scotty. Do you notice that? Like, we had talked before about how Nick had really said, like, I want you to take the shots, I want you to take the threes. Like, he wanted more Scotty. And I felt like he was doing that, you know, like he was starting to become comfortable with not second guessing those things and just taking the shots and, you know, looking for himself and being aggressive. I do feel like there's been a shift in recent weeks as Pascal's come back. And I think that's probably normal as he's trying to like feel out where he fits. I guess, do you see that? And do you think that the team anticipated that happening? Or do you think that people would like to see him be aggressive?
I think
soon
that there's something, it's like in the middle, right? Like, mm-hmm. it makes total sense that it happened.
Yeah.
And yet you would like to see him find more ways to get involved in the half court offense. Like that, that's because if he's just like, he is a part, I think we can agree, of the Raptors' best 5-man unit most nights. But if he's relegated to a guy standing in the corner or, you know, making the occasional cut, I'm not sure that's going to do a ton for them.
Right. Well, so, he can do so much even when he is only doing those little things that it's like, let's get him involved. Yeah.
No, yeah, but like, think about the Suns game, right? Like, you need another.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, whether it's shooting, and that's what I wrote about after the Suns game, is like, if the Raptors are going to upgrade somewhere, like, it's probably that, you know, wing, that depth wing position, giving you somebody who can stand in the corner and make shots. Those guys are obviously hard to come by. But, you know, even so, it's hard to imagine the guy who supplants Scotty Barnes from the final five most nights.
Oh, that's not happening.
So,
yeah.
And so like, let's get him more involved than just that. Saying that.
But it is normal,
just
right?
That, like, just that is fine. And he'll figure it out if he is healthy enough to do so. So let's hope.
I think, I guess the way I guess the reason I was bringing this up is because I do feel like a lot of people seem to be a lot, I say people, meaning fans, like people watching the team, seem to be kind of worried about the fact that he hasn't been as aggressive or just, you know, that, like you said, he's taken a bit of a step back. But I think that that's totally normal. Like, I guess that's what I was looking for, is for you to agree with me and say
we're
that
all just
it makes
for
sense.
Validation, Holly.
I don't think that is the thing to be worried about with Scotty. I'm not really worried about any sort of injury thing right now, although listening to you makes me sort of worry a little bit. So thank you for that. But
that's what I'm good for.
But yeah, I think that it's to be expected that a rookie trying to get used to playing with different lineups, especially with like another all-star in, or a former all-star, probably current all-star, maybe current all-star in Pascal Siakam, that he kind of is deferring a bit to figure out where he fits. I think that's normal and makes sense. And hopefully he gets to be back on the court again to work through that.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, Gary Trent also missed the last two games. I don't think it's like, wildly controversial after the Raptors' non-Van Vliet and Ananobi players combined to shoot like 0 for a million right. from three, to say his absence has been felt maybe more than Scottie Barnes at this point.
Oh, definitely, Especially against the Suns. Like, you really saw it in that game.
Yeah, and the Raptors, I mean, you just looked at what the Suns were mm-hmm. doing to Van Vliet, like both pressuring him when he was inside or outside the arc and making it, like, he, you know, against the Pelicans, he got 17 threes off. Against the Suns, he got 9 off. Like, and mm-hmm. there's, I mean, obviously that's just the sign of a way better team with a way better, I don't want to say a way better game plan, but, you know, certainly the ability to carry out a game plan a lot better. And Trent would, you know, at the best of times, let's say this is a team that needs, that is lacking for half court space in the offense, and Trent, beyond Van Vliet, Trent is the biggest reason why. So, yeah, hopefully he gets well soon. Nick Nurse said he was basically shocked when he didn't play against the Pelicans. He said he looked fresh as a daisy in his warm-ups.
I would like to look fresh as a daisy. I would like to feel fresh as a daisy.
For once in my life, I would like to feel that. Yeah, they're gonna need those guys. This is a tough stretch coming up.
But also,
go on.
Before we move on from Gary, what a poncho he was wearing on the bench last night. Loved it.
Yeah.
Big poncho fan over here.
Did I tell you my wife sent me the link for it?
That's an expensive poncho.
Yeah. I believe it was $1,850.
Oh, I actually thought it would be more than that. Actually, I'm surprised. It would be cool to be an NBA player.
The black version of it is.
I would have preferred the black version for myself. I'm a big poncho fan. I don't know if you know that about me.
Like, the one that my wife sent me, what is in the women's section, which isn't, like, Gary pulled it off.
Was that a hint? Was she saying, hey, Eric,
this
is what I would like? No, for herself. Was that a hint you should buy her?
I think she would have me killed if I bought that for her.
Same. I think, I wouldn't be able to do that. But I'm not an NBA player. Being an NBA player seems pretty awesome. I would like to buy a $2,000 poncho. But yes, over the pandemic, I've become a very big fan of ponchos. They're very cozy and
if you'd like to look it up, it's the Mantella Down Hood logo jacquard wool cape from Nordstrom. And as my friend Steve said, when does it come to Nordstrom Rack? anyway, Gary Trent looked like, I'm watching Watchmen right now. He looked like he belonged in Watchmen last night. Like, with the mask and the hoodie cape, he very much looked like he could fit in that setting.
I haven't watched that, but I've heard that it's incredible.
Let's go to quickly before we get to some reader questions.
Oh, sorry. Yes, yes.
I'd love to talk about fashion forever.
I was
going to
go talk about TV.
I feel like we've done that enough lately.
You don't want a Marvel show, a Marvel episode.
Yeah, no, our substitute producer, Dave Dufour, encouraged us to do that last week. So it is something, maybe the off-season content we can talk about.
Before we switch, where are you with the leftovers?
So I'm done season two. And
are you taking
I'm
a break?
Taking a break between season two and season three, as recommended by the unreasonablest Ryan Wohlstatt.
I love the very loud sigh you made when I brought you back to TV. There wasn't even, you didn't even attempt to hide your annoyance with me.
No, I'm just, you know, I'm getting worried. Like, I have the length of time this podcast is going up here, and you know, there's
well, let's move it on.
Anxiety.
We're good.
Yeah. Okay. anyway, the ending of, there were, after you quit The Leftovers, let's say, there were a few banger episodes. I'm not going to say, like, I'm not going to tell you to rewatch. I don't think it's a show for you.
You're going
to
talk about the one where he's like the agent at the hotel.
That
right?
wasn't even my favorite. That was, Ryan Wohlstatt's favorite, but there is in the sixth episode, there was an extended scene with Carrie Coon and Regina King that is just, you know, television acting at its best.
Two heavyweights.
They are great. And very satisfying conclusion to the season, as I would say was the same in season one. No need to further get on this tangent, because we're already well down the road of it. So, as I mentioned last night, if the Raptors are looking on theathletic.com, subscribe, yay! We'll soon be, as people know, the New York Times is in the process of purchasing The Athletic. That sale still has to go through, but I welcome my new corporate overlords enthusiastically. But yeah, you can still subscribe to The Athletic. You should do it and support good journalism in now multiple ways. You can do that. As I wrote there, if the Raptors are going to improve, a natural place would be with wing depth. And the three guys who got a shot last night, Yuta Watanabe, who nice to see him back from health and safety protocols. Safe to say that was not his best game. Svi Mykhailiuk, who I'll just wrap up his game by saying one of the questions we got for my Twitter call out for questions was, why Svi?
That's not nice.
It was not nice, but it's kind of funny. And Justin Champagny, who had 5 rebounds in 10 minutes, all of which were offensive rebounds, as the Raptors grabbed 22 offensive rebounds against the Suns, almost making up for the fact that they shot 22% from 3-point range and 60% from the free throw line, but not quite. And after the game, Nick Nurse said he is knocking on the door of regular rotation minutes.
The door doesn't exist anymore. The door's down. The door's open. The door's gone. Champagne is in the living room. He's there. He has joined the party.
Yeah, it's much like it's comparable to Delano Banton early in the season, where like what he's doing every time he's out there is, even if it's not something that the Raptors need the most of, like the Raptors need a guy who can hit 3 threes, you know, who can come in. But, like, that guy doesn't exist on this roster.
It's positive. He's adding a positive impact every time he's in the game. And you kind of jokingly tweeted it last night. I think it was your tweet. I hope I'm not giving you credit for someone else's. But it was kind of that, like, the Raptors' offense at this point was basically just getting offensive rebounds. Yeah, okay. And, yeah, I mean, we've talked before about how Champagne just has this incredible ability to be in the right place or to find find an offensive rebound. But yeah, he just makes things happen and he plays super hard and he was really good. I mean, it felt to me, hearing you say that it was only 10 minutes, I'm actually surprised because it felt like he played more than that. Maybe that's just because his impact was so much more than the other two players you mentioned in last night's game, at least. But yeah, like I would have kept him in there in the fourth.
I think the reason you couldn't is because of Ayton, pretty much.
Like, I mean, I get it, but yeah. But I also probably would have just continued running with Pascal when he had 5 fouls. I think I probably would have just. But that's usually my take with that is if you're in a close game and your star player has 5 fouls, you kind of just. Roll the dice.
Well, to
bring it back to Fred VanVleet's bet on yourself. Yeah, I would have just rolled the dice.
The Raptors were up 6 when VanVleet fouled Landry Shamet, I believe, on a 3-point attempt. For the people that asked, Nick Nurse had already used his challenge successfully, I may add. I think also on a 3-point shot. He couldn't challenge. I think so. I'm not positive. Maybe not. I think Devin Booker had extended his legs, but I it was on OG, I think, but I can't remember if it was a 3 or a 2. You would have loved, I don't want to hammer Nurse for, like, because he won and he got likely points off the board. So that's not a small thing. But, you know, if you knew now what you know now, you would have kept that challenge on the board. That's not the way this works.
I think it's silly to criticize coaches for using challenges. They're there to use if you see an opportunity. Yeah.
Sometimes it's not. There is such a thing as leverage. And if, like, it's a low... But very rarely is it, like, obviously wrong. I think, you know, erring on the side of waiting to use it in the fourth quarter is probably the right move more often than not. Anyway, again, another tangent. But Siakam was... the Raptors were up 6 with about 9 minutes mm-hmm. left, I think, when he went out. So I do understand them taking him out. At that point, like, maybe I would have brought him back a minute earlier than they did.
It just turned really quick, and you could feel it turning. And then it was like, uh-oh, the Suns. And also, to start the podcast, you referred to the Suns as a good Suns team. They're the best team in the NBA right now. So, best record in the NBA. They are. So
31-9, one game ahead of Golden State.
They're really good.
But yeah, Champagne... really good. I think, you know, I still have high hopes for Utah, but he just, even before he went out with protocols, his play has waned a bit. So I think those two guys are right there for those minutes for me right now. I personally don't need to see a lot of Svi Mykhailiuk in the next little bit. If things remain the same, but I get it too. Like he does give you a bit more offensive punch in terms of creation. The 3-point shot, however, exists more in theory than in practice.
Speaking of the bench though, Chris Boucher.
Yeah. I think we've talked about him the last few weeks, but God, I just continue to be really impressed by what he's managed to do in what isn't, like, it's becoming a role for him, but, like, wasn't, like, the traditional Chris Boucher role necessarily.
Yeah.
Certainly not based on last year. And he's, like, made it his own. It's sort of mm-hmm. the activity he's, or the degree to which he has created this role for himself and mm-hmm. grabbed this mm-hmm. role is what's really, what makes me optimistic about what's going on here.
And he's talked to the media about this too. Like on multiple occasions, he's talked about how he's gone back to film and he's watched film both from this year and also last year to see what he was missing. And he, you know, he realized he was so focused on the 3-point shooting and that wasn't really working for him this year. And things, you know, things have changed and he decided to get back to cutting to the basket and playing inside and just like going back to the player he was, I guess, before he kind of had a really successful stretch playing, you know, shooting from three in the bubble. No, not the bubble. Tampa.
Yeah.
Last season. Yeah. And he was really open and honest about wanting to figure it out. And like he said, I'm going to figure it out. I'm putting the work in. Like, I know that I'm a better player than what I've been showing. And it's paid off. He has figured it out. He has created a role for himself. And we've talked before about how Chris seems to be one of those guys who plays better. He functions better when he knows the amount of minutes he's going to get and he has like a solidified role. Nothing this season is going to be ideal for most players for considering.
Anybody. Yes.
For anybody, but especially on the Raptors team where there's fans one night in Milwaukee, you have 20,000 fans. In Toronto, you're not having fans. The lineups are changing, injuries, protocols, blah, blah, blah. But I think that he was really honest and really did look in the mirror, as people like to say. And yeah, he didn't really make excuses and he didn't like blame other people or talk about it. He just figured it out. And I think that that's really awesome for him and also commendable that he did that.
Yeah, for sure.
He had 13 points, 16 rebounds, and 3 blocks against the
rebounds. Yeah, it makes it a very interesting conversation around the trade deadline because he does have an expiring contract and the Raptors do have that need for more shooting. I still do wonder if there's like a need trade out there. I haven't done quite enough research to say yes or no, but if he stays here, it is good to know that he is now finding a way to get in where he fits in, to use an old phrase. Is that the phrase? Maybe.
It's a very old phrase.
Let's get some Twitter questions. Stephen Housen Jan, I hope I'm pronouncing that name right, Hausen Jan. Who is the current member of the Raptors bench you see as most likely to become a starter quality player on the Raptors or another team?
Ooh.
I know, good question.
That's a great question.
Yeah.
I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, you're definitely just putting this off to me as I...
Although last week you kept hitting me with every every Twitter listener question. And I did, I did make it a point to be like, I need to split this up because I felt like I was constantly,
Is it crazy? Well, I think Precious Achiuwa is probably the answer. I just think he does a lot of things really well. And if he can refine the things that he does not, I think that's the shortest, it's the shortest path for him from where he is now. I mean, he's already started some games for the Raptors this year, to like the ideal role for him. Because the ideal role for him, as much as the Raptors talk about wanting him to be another guy who can, you know, get a rebound and go and all that, like the, you know, screen and dive play, like stat center, like you can see that. So I think the answer is probably Achiuwa.
What's your hard answer? Is your hard answer the same as mine?
If it's Justin Champagne, it is.
Oh, wow. No, but I love that. I love that. My hard answer is Delano Banton. I would love nothing more than for in a few years' time to see Delano being like a rotation starter. How cool would that be?
It would be. And I did think about him. He doesn't quite have enough of the other, like Champagne.
He's but we're not talking about today, right?
No, I know, but it's most likely to become a starter. So even though you're not talking about today, you do have to consider what you already know he can do. And because I think Champagne is already a average plus defender, and because you know he's such a plus rebounding, it's really, can the guy hit a three? And that's a big thing. And
he can and he will. I have such confidence in the desire that Champagne has to be on the floor. Like, you really see that when he's out there. He wants to be there. And then thinking about that game where his game winner was waved off and he talked, I loved when he said, like, man, that hurt. Like, he was so honest talking about that, that he's just like a great story and this would be a great story for him. So I also love that answer. That's my like second hard answer.
Yeah. Agree. Fred VanVleet, I don't have the quote in front of me, but he gave him like the full undrafted free agent blessing last night post game.
I didn't see that.
Go back and watch Van Vliet's press conference, but it was without like saying what he was, what that was, it that was essentially what I took from it. It's like, yeah, the Fred Van Vliet bet on yourself nod of approval.
That's awesome
for Justin Champagne, who Van Vliet has obviously gravitated to. Let's end here. Just
that's it for the questions.
No. One more question. We'll end with this one, not as a final answer, but just as a sort of check in on how we're feeling about things. Comes from Joe Timms. How far do you see the Raptors going this season, assuming the starting five can stay healthy?
You know, when I started before the season started, I predicted that the Raptors would finish sixth and as high as fifth. And a lot of people told me that that was silly. A lot of people did not agree. And then for a while there, I also thought maybe I had lost it because it did not look like my, what I had envisioned for this team was going to come through or happen. But then we had this little stretch of the past seven games and suddenly I know you say there's a lot of injuries and playing undermanned opponents, and that's very true. But the Raptors also were the other team on the opposite side of that as well this season. So I think that evens out a little bit.
I'll say, but they did have Pascal Siakam out for the first 10 games, which obviously makes a difference.
I feel pretty pretty happy right now. Like, I feel pretty good. So where do I think they're gonna go or end up? I'm gonna stick with what I said when the season started. And last week we talked about this, and I said that I thought that they would be in the play-in tournament and would make it to the playoffs that way. I think that they may not be in the play-in tournament. Well, no, they will be in the play-in tournament, right? That's how that works.
Well,
yeah. They will make it.
I introduced this podcast by saying we were coming to you live from the morass of the Eastern Conference. And that is because seeds 3 through 11 are separated by... Why am I doing that? Seeds 2 through 11 are separated by 6 games.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And like Cleveland is in the last... we're recording this on Tuesday... or Wednesday. Cleveland is in the sixth seed, I should say. They're 23-18, and then the records go 22-19, 20-18, that's the Raptors, 21-20, 20-21, 20-21. So
yeah, so I think the Raptors will end up probably in that sixth spot, which I didn't think, you know, a couple weeks ago. And also, obviously, Cleveland had, you know, a really bad injury that they're having to deal with. Two bad injuries that they've had to deal with.
The Rubio one is huge, yeah.
Which is awful, obviously. But I do think that I could see the Raptors moving into that sixth spot.
I would say, I started the season saying they'd lose in the play-in.
You said that last week, right?
Probably. This little stretch, like you, has me nudging up a bit. I think they will still fall in the play-in tournament, but I'd predict them to escape it and losing in the first round. With an absolute ceiling of like an upset based on, you know, circumstances and then losing in the second round. And that's why I know we'll get lots of trade questions. Like, I think when thinking about the big picture, you really have to be sure a guy's going to be around for a while before you start talking about trading a first round draft pick with this team.
Because they're
going to need those productive pieces on rookie contracts in order to keep this thing going. And even if they do decide to break up the core at some point, I think with a team that has that ceiling, unless, like, you know, so many things break right that, you know, you can't even predict them at this stage, you've really got to err on the side of caution, especially when, you know, one of your most important players is 20, and and all of your, you know, your four most important players still have a lot of very good years ahead of them. So I'm not rushing. This isn't a team that should be all in win now, or even like mostly in win now. If they can do a need for need trade, or if they can, you know, trade some seconds for something that helps them, I'd be into that. But beyond that, it would have to take like a really, really good piece. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. We kind of talked about this last week. There was a question kind of similar to this. And yeah, I think whatever the Raptors do end up doing this year, or where they finish or how far they go, all of that is like a bonus in a way. Like, it's kind of just wait and see what we have. I don't think it's going to be, let's make a move to try to make this season whatever.
Saying that, give me some playoff games in front of a packed crowd in Toronto, baby. Give me it.
Come on, people.
Attach it to my veins. I need it. The Raptors have a 5-game road trip coming up Friday in Detroit for another Dwayne Casey revenge game.
That game is coming after the Bulls opened the third quarter against the Pistons last night on a 17-0 run. So
yikes, guys, in the words of Fred Katz. At Milwaukee, presumably with Giannis Antetokounmpo, but who knows. And then a trip that I'm no longer going on. At Miami on Monday, we'll probably talk to you after that game, and then in Dallas and Washington to finish that trip up. Do you want to do all 5 games, all 3, or just 3 games?
Ooh,
what do you want?
Let's do all 5.
Okay, so
you first.
I'm gonna play at quasi chalk and go win in Detroit, losses in Milwaukee, Miami, Dallas, and win in Washington. But I don't feel good about any of those, mostly because of the Detroit baggage. But this is I had a tweet that people yelled at me about last night's game really telling you a lot about where the Raptors were at compared to their win streak, which I think was proven correct, by the way. People saw it as a negative, and then it turned out that I meant like it was mostly positive. But this stretch is gonna, especially going up to the February 10th trade deadline, it should be, it's a pretty good cast of games coming up and should tell us a lot about the team.
I think I'm just looking at the games listed right now. So you know what? The tricky part is Detroit, because it feels like the Raptors don't usually play their best games against Dwayne Casey. I think that the team will go, how many games? There's five games. Okay, let me get my math straight. I think that they will go 3-2. Is that what you said?
Who are they beating then?
I think that they are going to beat Detroit, Dallas, and Washington.
Ooh, Dallas has been pretty good lately.
I know they have been. That was going to be my, like, whoa, this will be a great road game kind of thing. But then I realized they also have to beat Detroit, which you would think that that would be an easy, not an easy game, but you would think that could be a win. But as we've mentioned.
Yeah, so I'd say 3-2, great. 2-3, sort of expected. That's what I predicted. 1-4, explainable, but not good. 0-5, abject disaster. 5-0 or 4-1, you know, let's just start talking about trading three first rounders for pick the star, you know? that's sort of where we're at. Holly, I will talk to you next week. Listeners, thank you for the questions. Thank you for listening. Watch out for the tweets. I usually send them on the day of the that we're recording the podcast, and we always appreciate those. And thanks for listening. Yeah. Holly, be well, and say hi to your mom for me.
I will do so.
Thanks, guys. See ya!
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.